Thank you, Reverend Kristen. Foothills Unitarian Universalist Church, it is a joy to be with you this morning. Thank you for this invitation. I have long been a fan of Reverend Gretchen's ministry. She and I were blessed to walk together with some colleagues for the Border Action for Immigrants in December of 2018. I have long been inspired by her prophetic voice, by her deep spiritual reflection, and her depth of love for this faith. She is a beacon for Unitarian Universalism. So being with you today is especially meaningful. Thank you for this invitation. We heard Howard Thurman's words. There must always be some place for that which in itself is breathlessly beautiful. Something that gathers up in itself all the freshets of experience from the drab and commonplace areas of living and glows in one bright light of penetrating beauty and meaning, then passes. Thurman's wisdom brings me great comfort these days, when beauty, relatedness, even the singing of angels feels harder to find and even harder to hang on to. Have you ever experienced one of those moments of penetrating beauty? Perhaps noticing the full moon. It's truly captivating when you can see it full and huge and bright and setting in the early morning hours, and your breath catches. Then in soaking up that penetrating beauty, do you stop long enough to experience that deep feeling of peace and connection with the whole world? I was just lamenting to my husband on July 4th weekend that on my walk home from a neighbor's backyard picnic, I'd forgotten to stop and soak up the full moon. It's so easy to forget these days. And yet it's even more important in this time of uprising and revolution, in this time of continued isolation, that we soak up those moments of spiritual nourishment and penetrating beauty as sustenance for the justice work and movement building that continues to grow and to ask much of us. It's these moments of pause, of beauty, of spiritual sustenance that anchor us to a core tenet of our otherwise rather disparate Unitarian Universalist theology, that tenet of belovedness, that universal love that is available to all of us, that says all are worthy. In her memoir, Speaking of Faith, author and the host of NPR's On Being, Krista Tippett, speaks of the religious background of her life and teaching her that belovedness is woven into the very fabric of life. It was the sentence that captivated me most. She writes, "Erudite analyses, for all their merits, rarely take note of the power of a sense of belovedness as an antidote to fear." Hear that phrase again. Belovedness as an antidote to fear. Now, I understand belovedness as that deep feeling of interconnection, that understanding that we are not alone in this world, that the moon's light doesn't shine just for me, doesn't hold only me up. It is doing so for the whole world. Belovedness, however, isn't quite the same thing as beloved community. Belovedness is the root of it. It is the power we access in order to create beloved community. And we are all feeling a deep need for beloved community right now. And our churches strive to be that very thing. And sometimes we get in our own way and we get tripped up and our beloved community becomes our beloved clubs. And sometimes those communities become cliquish. And though we preach the gospel of inclusion, we don't always walk the talk. I think sometimes it's because we hold on to a lot of fear. Fear of change, fear of the unknown, even a fear of difference, a fear of loss to the memory of what we hold dear. Perhaps even a fear of our own power. And an underlying fear that we are not worthy of belovedness for ourselves. The power of belovedness is an antidote to fear. I spent 17 years in Los Angeles and became an avid follower of Father Greg Boyle, one of the most amazing contemporary practitioners of belovedness. He is the Jesuit priest who serves a parish in South Los Angeles whose life's work has been ministering to gang members, a ministry that he turned into Homeboy Industries. And in his book, Tattoos on the Heart, he tells a story of one of those moments of ministry. He tells a story of being at the funeral of yet another young man. He's buried more than 200 of them. This young man's name was Chico. And Chico was one of the homeboys, but he was working a steady job and he was trying to make a change and turning his life around. Chico was innocently gunned down in front of his house. Father Greg was at the funeral home alone, standing with Chico's body in the casket, having a moment of prayer and farewell, a moment of deep emotion when he felt the tears come over him. And then he was interrupted by the presence of the mortician. So Father Greg whispers loudly, "Now that was one terrific kid." The mortician responds in a too loud, too incredulous voice. "He was?" Father Greg writes this story expressing the core of his own Catholic theology. He writes, "If there's a fundamental challenge with these stories, it is simply to change our lurking suspicion that some lives matter less than other lives. Behold the one beholding you and smiling." Boyle says it's precisely because we have such an overactive disapproval gland that we tend to create God in our own image. It's truly hard for us to see the truth that disapproval does not even seem to be part of God's DNA. God is just too busy loving us to have any room for disappointment. I love this story, and I am simultaneously pained by it. I have been the mortician. I have stood in judgment of another person's worthiness based on just one small part of their story. I have succumbed to cultural norms and stereotypes that tell me a young Hispanic man in South Los Angeles equals gangbanger, equals criminal, equals unworthy. I have allowed my overactive disapproval gland to run amok at times, to harden my heart, and to keep me separate from the bounty of belovedness. And today, we certainly witness an out-of-control disapproval gland in our culture. Not just in the obvious spaces of racism and oppression and hyper-individualism or the right to my own personal freedoms, but we still witness it even among our white, liberal communities, decrying certain tactics and language. Here in Boise, I watch it take root in our largely Democratic city council. We like to call ourselves a blue island in a red state. And as many of us push for conversations about defunding the police, our public figures here in Boise say things like, "I wish we'd use different words. Defund the police is so divisive. We have to get it right, and it takes time. And we're not hearing the stories despite days and days of protests on the street, when the stories are everywhere, except perhaps in their inbox. So I keep that metaphor of the overactive disapproval gland on the forefront of my mind to remind me that I can turn it off when it activates. And instead, I can choose to cultivate my ability to be more like Father Greg's description of God, too busy loving others to have any time for disappointment. And yet, there is always a lurking fear for all of us, I'm sure. Fear so easily creeps into our being, and there is certainly much of it in this world. And there are many things that legitimately cause fear. But the thing about belovedness is that it doesn't supplant the fear. Remember, it is a power. It is the power that allows us to walk into the fear, to show up in spite of the fear. It was the power of belovedness 54 years ago that called civil rights activists to walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge not once but three times, facing heinous police brutality and vitriolic hatred. It is the power of belovedness that brings young people into the streets today in the midst of a pandemic, calling for change, calling for reparations, calling for justice. And it is that power of belovedness that today calls us to join in solidarity with those young leaders, with Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, LGBTQ, and all marginalized communities in the fight for justice, equity, and compassion, for dignity, for interdependence, for all of those values of our Unitarian Universalist faith. The power of belovedness helps us let go of our attachments to rightness, and perfectionism, and control, and fuels us instead to show up to answer the call, even in the midst of our own discomfort, even in the midst of fear, because that is where transformation begins. A couple of weeks ago, I attended a Black Lives Matter rally here in Boise outside the city council office in City Hall. The organizers gathered at the same time as the regularly scheduled city council meeting, as we are in the midst of setting our city budget for this next fiscal year. And so the moment is ripe for possibility and deep conversation about our values and priorities and resources. There have been ongoing rallies and protests, just as there have been nationally, and I know there have been in Fort Collins as well, following the uprisings resulting from the killing of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Rayshard Brooks, and too many others. Here in Idaho, every protest or rally always has some kind of alt-right opposition. I don't know if that's true in Fort Collins. They typically stand across the street with their flags and their signs and their guns. I never imagined I'd hear myself say that I'm used to them, but I guess I am. But this time it was different. This time they were not only present, but they had surrounded organizers in a circle and proceeded to shout them down the entire time. When we were asked to hold silence for 8 minutes, 43 seconds in honor of George Floyd and all those who have been killed at the hands of police, they shouted into their megaphones. They rang their sirens. They pushed and shoved and spewed racial slurs and hate speech. I've never experienced anything quite like this. I've never felt quite that nervous, not in Phoenix, Arizona under Joe Arpaio, not facing down Border Patrol in 2018. I cannot begin to imagine the pain and fear felt by the organizers, the leaders of the event. I could see it on their faces, the frustration, the anger, the fear. Several times we were jostled and pushed, and screamed at. Twice I inserted my body in between those who were also being pushed and threatened. I often wear my clergy collar to these events, primarily because I want to represent the solidarity of progressive religion, but also because I know it affords me just a little bit more respect. Folks tend to be nicer to me. And at the very least, if they are going to scream epithets at me, then I want them to imagine that I am their pastor, or their mother, or both. Unfortunately, that night, and of late, I am the only clergy person present. I don't share this story with you to garner praise or attention. I share it with you because each time I choose to show up, I must always set aside my personal judgments. I always have to fight back the fear and instead channel that belovedness, that ability to love others too much to have time for disappointment. The moon's light isn't shining just for me. Behold the one beholding you and smiling. Like so many who have gone before us, now is the time for us to show up. The power of belovedness is calling us. The power that fuels the vision of a world where we commit ourselves to our shared humanity and collective thriving. The power that holds us accountable for our actions and our inaction. The power that calls us to center the voices on the margins, to seed our own power, and to keep holding space, keep witnessing, keep learning, keep advocating, and keep transforming ourselves and our communities. This is how we live out our faith in the world. This is our good news. We Unitarian Universalists believe in this vision of belovedness for the world. It is woven into the very fabric of our religious lives. It is a core tenet of our diverse theologies. And when we tap into that power of belovedness, we are forced to look outward. We are forced to draw that circle wide, wide enough so that no one is left outside, wide enough to think about the other and to walk into the fear. I know we can't all be the Father Greg Boyles and the Reverend Dr. Kings of our time and in the world, but we don't need to be. There is a whole new generation of young leaders beckoning us to follow. All we need to do is show up, listen, and take action, however small those actions may be, one after the other. After the other. Remember this line from the hymn, Love Will Guide Us. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Belovedness is the power we possess to keep changing the world. May it be so. Amen.